The speaker is Tony Bonner, who I would say recently.
Carlo.
I'm sorry. Back again. Do you hear me?
Carlo, we cannot hear you at all. I think your connection is very weak.
Yeah.
My connection unstable, but 4/4. So maybe now do you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just quickly introduce Tony and then go ahead and Guillaume, please chair the session. Well, Tony recently graduated d'Institut d'Astrophysique de Paris, the Astrophysique Spatiale in Orsay, working with Nabila Aghanim, and then he started his first postdoc, where he is now at the Commandement Supérieur in a group devoted to let's say machine learning and data analysis for large data sets. And I'll let you go ahead, Tony, and because my connection is unstable. Sorry, please.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, okay. Thanks for the introduction. So indeed, I graduated last month, and I'm going to talk about the work I've been doing during the past 3 years. So about the cosmic web, mostly filament identification, and a very recent work that we published last week on the archive on the quantification of the cosmological information that is contained in the different environments. So I'm going to start with a brief introduction of what is the cosmic web, why is that interesting, and then we'll move on to the methodology that was developed, some applications, and the cosmological information. So the cosmic web is simply the name that we give to the distribution of matter at late time in the universe. Here, for instance, I'm showing parts of billions of galaxies that were mapped by the 2-micron Old Sky Galaxy Survey. So each dot is a galaxy. And this is only the tip of the iceberg of the matter distribution, because actually it's mostly made of an invisible component that we call the dark matter that you all know. We can simulate, like here, for instance. We see it from the Illustris simulation. And what's interesting to see is that both these patterns, so the bionic component of the matter, or the dark one, have the same kind of features. They are not filling uniformly the universe, but they rather stand on a structure, and this is what we call the cosmic web. And this cosmic web is made of very dense nodes that we see in both panels, that are linked together by elongated bridges of matter that we call the filaments, that are accounting for more than half of the mass of the universe. And these filaments are found at the intersections between milli-dense planar-like structures that we call the walls, that you can think of them as the surface of a bubble. These are hard to see in 2D, but you can think of planar-like structures, locally planar. And these walls are enclosing some of the vastest and most under-dense regions in terms of dark matter that we call voids, and quasi-empty in terms of galaxies. So we can wonder, why is that interesting from a cosmological point of view to have access to these environments? Well, first, we can use them to assess and develop theories about the formation and evolution of galaxies by asking questions such that, do galaxies that are standing in nodes or have the same properties that those that are living in voids? Different environments in terms of ability to form stars, in terms of stellar masses and stuff like that. We also know that baryons in the universe are found in galaxies, but not only, they are found in the form of diffuse gas. And we can ask whether this gas has the same properties as well in the different environments, in terms of temperature, density, or I don't know what. And finally, we also know that different parametrization and models of the universe create different matter distribution. So we can use the different properties of nodes, shapes, density, counts, and all to improve our cosmological constraints. But to be able to answer all these questions, we need first to have access to the environments based on some inputs that can be either the sparse distribution of traces like galaxies or halos in simulations, more observational-like inputs, or the continuous density field that is traced by this path trace, if you are in simulations, for instance. So this is in this context that I have been carrying my PhD, mostly focusing on two aspects of it. The first one is the identification of the environments, one of the environments of interest, which are the filaments from observational-like inputs, so sparse distribution of traces like galaxies or halos. And the second one is the use of the environments to answer cosmological questions, and more precisely, to constrain cosmological parameters, in what extent these environments can inform us about the underlying cosmological parameters. And actually, the first question is tightly coupled with another question that is more formulated in a data science context as, how can we efficiently extract meaningful representations of point cloud-like data sets such as the distribution? This is this first question that we are going to address, and then we'll see some application of the developed algorithm. And finally, we'll move on to the last part of the cosmological parameters application. Yeah, let's start with that and giving some first broad motivation or intuition of what's behind all that. So many data sets in science and non-science fields are coming as a set of points in a d-dimensional space. This is the case of the distribution of matter, dark matter particles of galaxies, the matter properties in simulations of the cosmic web. A single cell can contain up to tens of features of velocity, temperature, density, and all. But it's not restricted to cosmological data sets. In a biomedical field, for instance, you can have up to hundreds of dimensions of features of data health-related quantity that you can derive from a single patient, so a single data point. And also in images or in biology, the gene expression problem, you can have up to millions of dimensions for a single data point. And the common ground to most of these data sets is that they do not span uniformly than their input space. They rather stand on a lower dimensional manifold. We have seen this is the case of the distribution of matter. Most of more than half of the matter is actually standing on the one dimensional pattern made of nodes and filaments connected together. But it's also true for higher dimensional data sets where visualization is not directly possible. But if you have a look at images here, for instance, from the SciFAR 10 data set, and an image is simply a data point here in a very high dimensional space. If you have a look at images that are close to the data manifold that is here sketched in yellow, then you end up with the same kind of features and structures than the input data set. But if you are far away from it, then you completely lose this information. So this is based on this intuition and observation that I have been working during my PhD on two types of patterns. The first one, the cluster type data sets, which are just aggregation of data points in the space, like nodes, for instance. We won't discuss it today, but we will focus on the second one, which is the spatially continuous ones that we assume as being generated by a one-dimensional structure that we aim at extracting. So if data points here are galaxies, for instance, this makes us think of filaments. So this is the one that we are focusing on in the first part of the presentation. We developed an algorithm that is based and largely inspired on the principal curve field, which has been introduced in 1989 by Astier and Sutzel, very intuitively and informally as the curve that is passing in the middle of a point cloud distribution like that. So it somehow extends the first principal component to nonlinear component. And here during my PhD, we have been proposing a model of this underlying one-dimensional structure as a graph whose nodes are actually Gaussian clusters. So let me show how it works. We model the distribution of data points, so let's say galaxies in our case, as a linear combination of k known probability distribution using a mixture model. In this case, the distributions are Gaussian, so we just pave, basically, the distribution of galaxies with k Gaussian components with their own amplitudes, pi k, their own positions, mu's, that are shown as blue stars in the diagram, and their own covariances as sigma, so that we will assume that the noise around the one-dimensional structure is Gaussian locally and also isotropic, so that we can use diagonal covariance matrices. And we also add a uniform background component to take into account data points, so galaxies that are not standing in the one-dimensional structure, like those standing, for instance, in voids or walls that we want to discard from it, that are outliers of what we want to model, basically. So for now, we do not have any idea of continuous representation of the dataset. We just have paved it with a higher level representation of K Gaussian component, but no continuous representation of it. So to include that in the model, we can use a graph that is acting like a prior, constraining more precisely the set of positions of the Gaussian components that are paving the distribution through a Gaussian distribution like that, where you recognize lambda mu, that is the precision parameter, the inverse variance of the Gaussian distribution. And here you recognize something that is very close to the usually used L2 norm in statistics to constrain the smoothness of an estimate, except that here it's not directly acting on the Euclidean space, but on another space that is the graph structure conditioned by this AIG matrix, that is the adjacency matrix, that is just one if two nodes are connected and zero otherwise. So this is like a graph prior that we include to link the nodes together. And in all the presentation, I'm going to use the minimum spanning tree to do that. So I'm just linking all the nodes with the minimum total Euclidean distance to do so. Okay. So now we have our full model. We have modeled our distribution of galaxies through the mixture model. And then we have used the graph to link the nodes together. So we need to find a set of optimal parameters that are fitting the set of observed data points of observed galaxies. And to do that, we can maximize the log likelihood using the expectation maximization algorithm, which basically leads you to optimize this kind of cost function in which you see different terms. The first one is what we call the data fidelity term, which is measuring somehow how much your graph, so nodes of your graph, your representation, usually in a more general way, is close to the observed set of data points under some fuzziness introduced by the sigma. And the second one is measuring exactly the same, but for the background component. And they are both weighted by these quantities here, that are the probability of a given galaxy, I, being well represented by one of the K components in the model. And the last term is the one that we have been introducing just before, that is the measuring the graph smoothness or the graph length. And here, lambda mu, we see that it's acting like a trade-off between how much you want your graph to be smooth and giving more weight to this term, or how much you want it to be close to the observed set of data points, giving more weight to this one. So by iteratively solving this kind of equation, you are learning a graph that is passing in the middle of the Pontcloud distribution with robustness to outliers, thanks to this background distribution, and also learning the local width of the structures through the variance of the nodes that are being learned as well. So this is a small diagram, but if you want to have a look to what happens in real cases. Here, for instance, I'm showing the distribution of galaxies from the Illustris TNG simulation. So the Python code for all of that has been made available at this address. So the code is entitled T-Rex for tree-based ridge extractor, because we are using the minimum spanning tree as a prior. So here I'm illustrating an application of it on a very thin slice of the Illustris TNG simulation. Each dot that you see is the galaxy from the simulation. Here you have the minimum spanning tree that is sometimes used in cosmology. We post-process this usually cutting small branches, removing extremities, and post-smoothing some branches to have something that is passing in the middle locally. Well, all of that can be done directly by using this kind of graph as a prior in the optimization scheme I've shown you before, and we obtain this kind of graph here. So we have robustness to outliers of the structure. We have some branches that are not thrown in regions where you have small, very small density of data points. You also have some branches of the minimum spanning tree, initial one that are removed, spurious one usually. And it also provides an estimate of the local width of filaments through the variances that are learned, so that you can see as a gray shaded region around the one-dimensional curve that is passing in the middle. So we are not changing the definition of the minimum spanning tree for the filaments, but we are adding some features that are obtained during the optimization scheme. So let me just show you some of the applications we made of it during my PhD. The first one is the building of catalogs of filaments and extracting some characteristics of it. So by post-processing the graph, we can define filaments as branches of the graph structure. So it has been done in 3D. Here I'm showing a small 2D slice of it. So we can identify the length, the curvature, the density, and the galaxies that are residing in each individual filament and do statistics over it. Here, for instance, I'm showing a plot in which we are drawing universes in three cosmological simulations. I think these are Eagle, Magneticum, and Illustris TMG, where we have small filaments that are much denser than long ones. So during the universe in which we are detecting small bridges of matter connecting nodes and long filaments passing through voids, or I don't know what, that are of small density, a border of the voids. And we have also been using the output of the graph on Illustris TNG with Céline Gouin, a postdoc in the group, to study the interactions between nodes and filaments in the cosmic web. So we know that nodes are getting fed by filaments with matter, with time, and we wanted to study what's the impact of it on the structure and the dynamic of the cluster. We have been carrying a statistical analysis on the Illustris TNG nodes. Here, for instance, I'm showing a node with a connectivity of 5, a connectivity being the number of filaments a node is connected to, and here a connectivity of 3. And what we show with this study is that first, there is a relation between the mass and the connectivity of the cluster. So with the more massive, the more connected you are to the cosmic web. And also that at fixed mass, in fixed mass beam, you have also an effect of the dynamical history and the formation of cluster with more the clusters that are younger and fastly accreting matter are more connected to the cosmic web than the older ones, basically. So you can check this paper for more precision about it. So this was to give some ideas of what we can do with the output of the graph pretty easily with this algorithm. So I've mostly been focusing right now on the links between filaments and the physics of the objects in the cosmic web, like nodes or galaxies. And we can ask whether filaments, and not only filaments actually, but all the environments can have information about the universe itself and parameters and models of the universe. So this is how I'm moving to this last part of the presentation, in which I'm going to talk about a very recent work we submitted on the use of the environments to constrain cosmological parameters and compared with the matter power spectrum. Usually, what you for the purpose of constraining cosmological parameters, we can use the matter power spectrum, which is nice because it's easy to compute, it's easy to relate to theory, and it's also sensitive to cosmological parameters. Here, for instance, I'm showing variations of the matter power spectrum drawn from a simulation where you have different values of the matter density, baryon density, Hubble parameter, the initial slope of the matter power spectrum, and the sum neutrino mass. And we see different shapes, amplitudes, wiggles, and all that we can use to constrain the cosmological parameters. And this is actually what is used with a bit more complexity in a galaxy redshift survey to constrain the cosmological parameters. And the basic question we wanted to ask is, what if instead of using the full distribution of matter, we used the one in the different environments and see individually their constraining power about these 6 parameters. So formulated differently, what is the theoretical cosmological information that is contained in the different environments? So when I say theoretical, I mean probing both large linear and small nonlinear scales. So we are using simulations to do that in this case. Cosmological information means that I will have a look at a set of 6 cosmological parameters, the one that I've been introducing before. And cosmic web environments means that we need to have a definition for the environments. We can't use the algorithm that I've presented before because it targets filaments, but not walls and voids and stuff like that. And we also need a statistical estimator in these environments. So in this case, we are using the power spectrum only. And the analysis has been carried using the Kirote simulation, which is a very large suite of more than 40,000 simulations spanning more than 1,000 cosmological models. And the fiducial cosmology is consistent with the Planck 15 ones, with more than 15,000 realizations of the fiducial cosmology. Then you have increments or decrements of each individual cosmological parameter with 500 realizations of each. The Kirote suite basically is the perfect playground to perform some statistical analysis like compute derivatives and covariance matrices and stuff like that. And this is precisely what we have been doing. So starting from the particles from one box of the simulation, what we need to do is first to have access to the environments. So to do that, we first compute the density field using an interpolation scheme. And then we solve the Poisson equation on the green to get access to the gravitational potential. It's because we are using it to define the environments in a T-Web-like formalism, for those who know. And for those who don't, it's basically using the eigenvalues of the second derivative of the gravitational potential, which is called the Dirac tensor. And the number of eigenvalues that are below a given threshold allows you to define the environments. So here, for instance, I'm showing what we get for this slice of the classification for the four environments at the cell level. So it classifies the cell of the continuous density field that we then propagate at the level of the particles to build then individual sub-density fields. So here, for instance, you see the density field drawn from the matter, all the matter particles. Here for void particles only, walls only, filaments and nodes. And now we have that, what we can do, the first thing we can do is just to have a look at the power spectra that we get in each of the environment individually and for the matter one, no better. So we have been doing this classification scheme on the set of 7,000 realizations of the fiducial cosmology from the Kierote simulation. And here I'm showing the spectra that we get in the different environments and for the matter. So the first thing we see is that filaments at large scale are getting most of the power at large scale, while these are nodes at smaller ones. And more interestingly, what we see is that there are different shapes and different amplitudes for the different environments. So we can expect that they can improve the constraints when we combine all this information together. And to quantify it, we have been using a Fisher forecast that allows us to derive the constraints drawn by each of these statistics for the set of six cosmological parameters. And this is what I am showing here, for instance. So the first row are the constraints that we get using the matter power spectrum alone. And then you have the improvement factor over the first row for each of the individual environments. And the first thing we see is that in most cases, the environment are individually performing better than the matter power spectrum, except in the nodes case and in the sigma 8 column. And we also see that there are some environments that are really constraining well some parameters, like voids are getting the same constraints as the matter for the sum nudge filaments, and filaments are getting alone three times tighter constraint just for omega m. And also interestingly, we also see that the combination of the information contained in the four environments allow up to an order of magnitude better improvement, better constraints than the matter power spectrum on NS, for instance, and also on. And and just to give an idea of what is happening here, we can have a look at the confidence ellipses that we get for the different statistics in the different planes. So here, for instance, I show the m nu omega m plane in top and m nu sigma 8 in the bottom. And if we focus on the top one, we see that we have different orientations for voids and filaments, for instance, almost orthogonal information, so complementary information that allows to break some degeneracies, like the impact of these parameters are not the same on the spectra drawn from the different environments that allow to break degeneracies and hence improve the constraints that we get when we combine them with the blue ellipse that we see. So it's also seen in the mu sigma 8 panel, but also sigma 8 omega b and other panels in which the matter degeneracy is quite large. So yeah, just to wrap up a bit before the questions, I hope that I've given you with this presentation a bit of insights on why is that interesting to have access to the environments and that it was challenging to detect the different environments. We've seen just before that we can improve the constraints on cosmological parameters using the different environments in simulations, of course. So what about more observational light input like halos or galaxies even, but this will need to come with biases effects, and also we need to see how to handle that, and also the definition of the environments, how to correctly identify them with the sparse distribution of tracer. And what about other statistics drawn from it? So I've been focusing on the power spectrum. What about PDF, cross spectra, bispectrum, and stuff like that? And from the identification point of view, all I've been presenting before was made on simulations. However, I think that the method has some great features to be applied in a galaxy redshift survey, like mitigating the redshift phase distortion. And also, I think that this deserves some of my time to dig something in that direction. So, yeah, I thank you a lot for your attention. And if you have questions, of course, please do ask, or remarks even.
Thank you, Tony, for your nice talk. I prefer to not turn on my webcam because of unstable. Yeah. I invite people to turn on the webcam for the questions. Let me start with a first question. So you proposed an interesting new method. Nonetheless, I'm sure you know that. There are a large amount of techniques that people is working on the topic since at least 30 years, more intensively in the last 10 years. So did you compare with the other studies, other techniques intended to trace the cosmic web environments and then perform very similar kind of study? Thank you.
Yeah, so indeed, as you said, there are a lot of methods that have been developed for this purpose. I think that each of them has its own caveat, its own definition, and its own advantages and all. But we wanted to not to change the definition. So as I've been presenting, we are using the minimum span tree definition basically, but we are refining it somehow. So we are not introducing like a new definition, but indeed it's interesting to compare them. And it has been done previously in 2017 by Libeskind et al. And basically, we added our comparison to this review paper. So using the same input and see what we get and how it compares with the other. So basically, they agree on some spaces and not on other ones. And interestingly, we also compare with some of the maybe more refined ones, which is multiscale and all the Nexus Plus algorithm on simulations, and compare the classification that we get at the level of the particles using our classification in the different in filaments and using much sparser inputs than the matter particles from the simulation. It agrees quite well. So I think that our method has an advantage in the sparsity of the tracer when you have not much input and stuff like that. While, of course, if you have access to the dark matter particles of a simulation, I would go for Nexus Plus or T-Web like we did. But for sparse input, it shows nice advantages over others. I don't know if it answers clearly the question, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I see Nicolas, you raise your hand, please. Also turn on your webcam. Thank you.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for the talk. That's really pretty cool stuff you are doing. I was wondering on your Fisher analysis, how do you compute the covariance matrix with this method? Is it based on a theory or based on a subsample of the charts?
Let me grab a slide. So no, nothing is done with theory. I think it would be much too hard to compute it from theory. So what we have been doing is just raw computation of the covariance matrix from the Kirote simulation. So we are using 7,000 realizations from the fiducial cosmology, and we are computing the covariance matrices up to 0.5 H per megaparsec to avoid aliasing effect at NO. So here you see in the left panel the matter covariance matrix, and here the different covariance matrices for the different environments. So everything is done numerically, basically, the derivatives and the covariance.
Okay, and in that case, do you account for errors in the inverse of the covariance matrix?
Exactly. Yes, okay. We are.
Okay, good. Thanks.
I see a question on the chat by Annie. I can read it, or Annie, are you there if you wish? Annie is asking.
Thanks for the nice talk. I was wondering if with your extraction method, you can use also 3D data or multi-wavelength data. Have you been able to add more slabs of information to extract the filaments?
So multi-wavelength data, we did not try anything, but in case of 3D data, yes, indeed, even though in my presentation, I've shown only slices and all, it's just for better visualization, but all the things have been done for instance, in this application in 3D distribution of galaxies, we are accounting for the three positions. multi-wavelength, we did nothing, no. I don't know if it's feasible, but maybe it's something that we need to dig, yeah.
Thank you.
Any other comment or question? I have one again, if I can.
Yeah, of course.
Any other. Well, can you show again the plot of the power spectrum splitted in environment types?
Yes. This one?
Yeah. Okay. And okay, now I'm comparing the yellow and red line for filaments and nodes, roughly catching the two halo and one halo term in terms of a halo model. Now, if you go to the ellipses for the Fisher analysis in the neutrino mass sigma 8 plane, yeah, it seems that the power spectrum PNN from nodes is less sensitive to sigma 8 instead of filaments, while in the power spectrum you have more power in the nodes than in filaments on the scales where typically you probing sigma 8. Can you comment on this? Or maybe I misunderstand the picture and not on the right scales?
But this is a question we asked ourselves. Why are nodes so getting so poor constraints, even on sigma 8, where we would expect that it would get the best constraints? And I think part of the answer is found in the covariance matrix. So if we have a look at the higher top right corner here, we have very, very strong correlation coefficients on the non-diagonal terms at very small scales already. So maybe it's just a matter of the highly non-linearities, and it doesn't constrain them. Because here we are not directly using the usual node information that is used to constrain sigma, but the matter distribution inside the nodes and filaments and walls and all. So I think this. Yes.
Is maybe there any problem in the value of the threshold you defined for the key web classification?
Indeed. So yeah, this is a great question because all I have been showing you here. In fact, I have been marginalizing over two parameters of the model of the classification scheme, which are the smoothing length and the lambda threshold, the lambda at which we are considering the different parameters. Indeed, if I fix them, I do not have the values, but if I fix them to a fiducial value, nodes become much, much stronger in terms of the constraining power on all cosmological parameters. So I don't have the table here, but it's becoming like the others parameter, like the others environments. So maybe it's also that, yeah. It's because, so in this case, it would mean that it's because their definition is a bit more fuzzy. You think that we have these poor constraints? If it's the case?
No, it seems inconsistent to me with the result.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's a matter of tuning some parameter, which is
actually, okay.
Well, I don't have the answer.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Thank you, Nicola. You have another question. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering if you planned on applying that to observations now, and what kind of observation you would use, and do you see some limitations? Because the gain that you propose from your Fisher forecast are quite amazing, almost too good, I would say.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you see some limitation that when you port this to observations could decrease the efficiency, or if it's not the case, I don't know.
So the first step we did toward observation is still using dark matter particles, which are not at all observation, but in redshift space. So I've not been showing it, but here, for instance, you see the constraints that we get in redshift space. So where you have redshift space distortions that are, of course, corrupting the classification scheme, but also improving the constraints of the matter power spectrum, because now you have the monopole and the quadrupole that can be used to break some degeneracies. You see, for instance, that just for the matter monopole plus quadrupole in redshift space, you are bringing down the constraints up to an order of magnitude on sigma 8 and mu using the very same simulations. Still, in this case, the environments are getting much, not significantly better constraints, but not as much as we had in real space. So as you said, these are too good, but we think that it is due to real space analysis. And also, if we want to bring into Halos, we would have additional bias systems to take into account for different environments. So it will increase the dimensionality of the data and all. So maybe it will also reduce. So yeah. So this first step and first analysis, real space plus dark matter particles, ideal case somehow. Then we are moving to redshift space, and then the step after that would be to go to halos and stuff like that, and see if we still can gain something by doing this kind of split or not. But yeah, that's the path we are following.
Super. Thanks. It's very promising. Thanks.
How are you planning to deal with to undo redshift space distortions respect to your classification scheme?
So the constraints that we are getting are doing nothing for redshift space distortions. We are basically applying the very same, but yeah.
Yeah, in the future, I mean.
In the future, I don't know if we want to undo redshift space distortions. Mm-hmm. We want to still do this classification and see just by doing that. Even if we have the distortions, can we still gain something over the mass matter power spectrum in redshift space, monopole, quadrupole, and all?
Yeah, do you risk to confuse the filamentary structures with nodes?
Yeah, there is this risk, and I think there are, even if in this analysis here, we are confusing some nodes with node particles with filaments ones. I think there are.
Well,
so we are not taking that.
For sure, we have this problem.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And any other comment or question? I don't see any raised hand. Nothing in the chat. So let me thank you, Tony, again.
Thank you.
And take this opportunity to wish everybody a nice end of the year for the next year. Let me advertise the next year's cafe clubs. They can be on-site or remotely based, depending on the availability of speakers. So I invite people to propose people, eventually visitors at LAM. In the meanwhile, we go ahead contacting potential speakers. And indeed, we have already a quite nice list, which goes until the 2nd of March of speakers that you can see at the JECO webpage. See you soon. Thank you again. Bye bye.
Thank you all. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Thank you.
Bye.